That guy is one for you right there. Welcome again to Rabbi Rubin, who's always so gracious. Each and every time I ask him, he says, "When can I do it?" And I say, "Any moment." And he's really always very, very good about it, and very happy to hear his Torah. I didn't look at my sheep. Next week is between Rosh Yom Kippur, so we're off till after Sukkot. I don't remember by heart, but Rabbi Adler and Rabbi Sittner. I don't know if anyone knows Rabbi Sittner. He lives in Bergenfield. He used to be a rabbi in Charleston, and he does chinuch-related items, I know, here. And there's one other that I already have set up. I don't remember. So, without further ado, Rabbi Eli Rubin.
Thank you, Dr. Freeman, for the privilege. It's not that for me, the reason why I jump is because I feel honored, so thank you. And thank you for coming out tonight, especially in the rain there of Ben Kessel Esser, and it's really an extra opportunity to learn and teach Torah. So I want to focus more on the pasuk that's in the more the middle of Vayelech. You know, Vayelech has two, the concluding mitzvot in the Torah. One is Hakel, and the other one is, which we'll get to, Bata Kitulchem et Hashira Zot. But before we get to the focus of the class tonight, I just really want to turn your attention for a moment, which I don't want to spend that much time on, more just to give it some thought after this year is over, is the first few words in the parsha, Vayelech Moshe. Most of the parsha ask, Moshe went? And of course the question that most people ask is, where'd he go? Was he, Atem Nitzavim was the last week's parsha, so clearly he was standing. And if you look at the parsha in juxtaposed in one contiguous flow, it must mean that if he was standing in last week's parsha, then he was moving in this week's parsha. And of course, where was he going? Vayelech Moshe. And if you look at the pasuk, he said to them, "Ben Me'a Be'esim Shana Anochi Ayom, I'm 120 years old. Lo Chalo Datzei V'Lavo, I can't come and go like I used to." Mefarshim question that we know that Moshe didn't have any. His eyes wasn't dimmed, and his body was. And frail, exactly what that means, I leave that up to you to better understand it. But Anaya Maralai, Lo Tavor at the Yarden Hazeh, which was the refrain in the Montreal here from Moshe Rabbeinu over and over again, obviously, since that fateful decision was made that Moshe couldn't enter the land of Eretz Israel. And he uses the opportunity to introduce Yehoshua, Hu Aver Lefanecha Kasher Diber Adonai, which, of course, is the greatest succession plan of them all. The brachot that he gave to Yehoshua in his lifetime sustained Yehoshua throughout Yehoshua's reign, practically flawless, perfect leadership, no dissension, and it was, even though he came after the great shoes of Moshe Rabbeinu to fill, you would have to attribute some of it, of course, to Yehoshua's study as a understudy for many, many years. Lo Yimush Bipicha, he never stopped talking to Moshe and being part of Moshe's life. But also you have to give a great deal of credit to Moshe Rabbeinu, that despite his own hesitation, his own reticence, his children weren't elected to be the leaders. We learned that in a different parsha. None of his children was elected to be a leader, and that, according to the Farshim, was a bit of a disappointment for Moshe Rabbeinu. And despite that, he, with a full heart, full embrace, without hesitation, Hu Holech Lefanam, Yehoshua will be the successor, and that kind of created the best transition plan. But I'd like to focus your attention on, by the way, the reason, Vayelech, so where did he go? I didn't answer the question. So I can give you one of the answers of the many, was that up until now, Moshe Rabbeinu was talking in the name of God, and therefore was Atem Nitzavim Hayom Kulchem. Everyone needed to stand and hear the word of Hashem, and Moshe Rabbeinu was the oracle, so to speak. He was the transmitter. Vayelech Moshe now was his own personal departure. And he was literally bidding farewell to one person after the other. So it was no longer that they were coming to him to hear Torah. His mantle, his responsibility, his ownership of teaching has now almost departed and is transitioning. As a result of that, he made this a very personal departure and a bidded farewell to one person after the other. It was a very poignant explanation of why last week was Atem Nitzavim Hayom Kulchem. And then, of course, as Moshe transitions, he goes from person to person. You can find many other answers. I think it's a very prominent question. Where did he go? Vayelech Moshe. But that one always resonates me with a great deal. It also shows his humility, because despite his misgivings, and we hear a lot of it, and his criticism, he still was deeply committed to Jewish people, and as a leader, and as a part of the community, and therefore went from person to person.
Yeah, I once went with the chief rabbi. I had the opportunity to be very close to the chief rabbi for many years, Rav Avraham Shapira, and we had to go someplace on a chief rabbi mission. It was actually before he was chief rabbi, Avraham Shapira, and we took a taxi. And then he was the Rosh Yeshiva of America's Rav, where I studied. So I went with him, and I had the privilege of going with him to this appointment. And then when the appointment was over, we went on a bus to go back to America's Rav. And I really did pretty audacious. If you do things that are irreverent when you're younger, I said to him, "Why are we taking a bus? Don't you want to take a taxi?" I said it a little nicer than that. And he said that when he was on his mission for the yeshiva, then he had to get there on time, and he had to make sure that there were no surprises in the way. But he said, "Now that it's over, he has no right to spend the yeshiva's money on a taxi." And he took a bus. I thought that was really a remarkable answer to give. And the whole bus ride with him was very interesting. You know, the future chief rabbi is getting up on a bus and just kind of like sitting down with all the folks. He was really quite a remarkable person. And we're getting, I want to focus on the Pasuk, which gets a lot of attention, and maybe some of you know pieces of it, and I hope that I can illuminate and add some light to this Pasuk. And even if you know part of it, that I hope there's something that I can add to your knowledge and to your own literacy around it. So it's Perek Lamed Aleph Pasuk Yutet. V'ata kitvu lechem et ha-shira hazot. And now I'd like you to write this shira. V'lamda et b'nei Yisrael, sima b'fihem. You should teach it to the Jewish people. Put it in their mouths. L'man tiyeh li ha-shira hazot le'ed b'bnei Yisrael. So this song should be as a witness to all of the Jewish people. So then what would be the obvious question? I mean, if you don't know it, it's not obvious. It's not a really fair question to say obvious. But what would be a question one could think about in this verse? What song? Where is there a song here? Is it written? Does it say there's a song? Are there notes? Does it indicate what it is? So, of course, it's open to interpretation what the reference is. The easy interpretation is that it's the next parsha, Hazinu. Hazinu Shemayim Badaber, B'tishmar Etzim Refrig, which is, of course, a very beautiful, long, poetic composition that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote about the future of the Jewish people. Some of it is a little harsh, but it's certainly written in a very beautiful, poetic language. And there are those like Rashi and many of the commentaries that do say, yes, let's keep this simple. That let's say that this shira is actually the shira of Hazinu. But many, from biblical exegesis all the way through the halachasists, would really do look at this not as a shira, as the poetry of Hazinu, but look at it like the Rambam does and many others, as it's the entire Torah. And therefore they codify the last mitzvah of the Torah as Vata kitvu lechem et ha-shira hazot. Please write down this entire Torah, all 600 ad tumam, from the beginning to the end. And they use a little bit of halachic acrobatics to get there, because since you're not allowed to write parts of the Torah in portions, and the shira of Hazinu is only a portion of the whole parsha, therefore it can't mean Hazinu, it has to mean much more than that, and ad tumam means all of it in its completion, therefore it must be ad tumam, the entire Torah. It touches upon, not for this class, if Dr. Friedman invites me back in a future shir to give, what exactly was the process of writing the Torah down? Did Moshe Rabbeinu write it down in segments? Or did he wait until it was all over and then he wrote it down in one full swoop? The last few psukim of the Torah is contested. Who wrote those? Because it says that Moshe died. Did he report on his own death? As the Rambam Bacha said, he wrote it with tears in his eyes as a possibility. Or did he dictate to Yehoshua? So there is a lot of commentary around who wrote the Torah and when was it written. But the basis for all of writing a Sefer Torah comes from this pasuk. Rambam and all the codifiers of Halacha include it in some form or another. So before we get to the biblical exegesis aspect of it and the explanation that I think you can learn, I want to touch upon it from a halachic point of view. What does it mean that we need to write a Sefer Torah? What would be the reason to write a Sefer Torah? Now, this is like class participation here. Why should we? What would be the reason of writing a Sefer Torah?
Something to learn from.
Okay, good. So let's hold on to that thought. It's the medium, it's the foundation for all Torah learning. So that's one bucket. What would be another one? Transmit to generation, excellent, which would be closer to learning, but that would, we'll see why the word shir comes out in that, so come back to that. So if I, well, two for two. Don't worry about getting wrong, because you're not going to get it wrong.
A testimony that we made a covenant with God, and we need to, we want to have proof of that.
It's all personal, right? The proof of it. Okay. So I have to say that if you were to go and spend 15, 20 minutes thinking about it, and then study the library of books that discuss this, you guarantee to hit, our survey says you'd get 64-65%, because it's really a rich pasuk that's teaching us a very significant amount of the poetry of halacha and Torah, which we'll get to. There is a nafka minal halacha. There is a difference in halacha what the reason is behind it. One reason, which is very prevalent, is that Torah scrolls get worn, they get old. And if we don't have a constant restream of Torah writing and refreshing it, we're going to end up losing the very basis of our testimony, and the words will get blurred, the Torahs will be illegible, and as a result of that, kind of like almost symbolically, metaphorically, our Mesorah will start to tear, and the seams will become a little strained. That's one concept of it. The second one that there are many more than two buckets from a halachic point of view, but the second bucket is that it's not about that there should be enough Sifrei Torah in the Aron Kodesh, but they were originally Sifrei Torah we were used to be learning Torah from them, like you said. So it's really not about the Torah itself, it's about what medium do we use to learn the Torah. So that's the Rosh, or better known in America as the Rush. So the Rosh said that this is not about a Sefer Torah in a time where people learn from Chamisha Chumshei Torah. It's about the Sfarim that you learn from. So first of all, according to the Rosh, you would be Mekayim, you would be able to fulfill this mitzvah if you bought Sfarim and you had a Jewish library. But according to those who said that, no, you have to write the actual Sefer Torah itself, you wouldn't really fulfill this mitzvah until you wrote a Sefer Torah. Now we know that you can write a Sefer Torah by writing one letter, and that's the Gemara Menachot says it. That a fiul kachvu odachad malal of katuv kilu katav is called sefer Torah kul. That's where it comes from. It actually goes all the way back to the Talmud. That writing one letter is as if you wrote the entire Torah. What are some of the differences that come out of this halakhic perspective? Very interesting. Let's say you have a sefer Torah that's no longer usable and into the Aron Kodesh. Are you still fulfilling the mitzvah of writing a sefer Torah if the sefer Torah can't be read in shul as a sefer Torah? So if it's good for the Rosh that you can learn from it, then you're allowed to. Then it's still a mitzvah. But by the way, you should know that Allah says you're not allowed to keep Sefer Torah in the Aron. That's not kosher. That's a different halacha. But if you say that it's a mitzvah to write a Sefer Torah and only have a Sefer Torah, if it's not kosher, if it's a puzzle Sefer Torah, then you didn't make the mitzvah. So there's a lot of nice play. The Gemara Menachot also discusses what happens if you buy it. Is it the same thing as writing it? So again, it's the nafkamina. If you say it's about learning it, well, what's the difference between you bought it or you wrote it? But if you say it's not about reading it, but it's about having a Sefer Torah, and it's about writing the Sefer Torah, the testimony, the covenant, going through the process, buying it, you wouldn't be able to fulfill the mitzvah. So there's a lot of halachic acrobatics in this, and it's a really nice conversation, but this is really the source where we all try at one point in our lives to get involved in writing a Sefer Torah. But I want to move away from the halachic point and just get a biblical exegesis. So there are some really interesting comments on this. First is that the Ramban points out, you have it in here, is why is it Vata Kitvu Lechema Tashirazo? So if you look at the Ramban on your page, he highlights that it's plural. It's not Vata Ktov et Sefer, it's Kitvu. They should write. If you're a little bit of if looking at this conceptually, and I gave the hint to it a little earlier, what would be the reason why the Torah wrote Kitvu Lechema Tashirazo? Think back before about what I said in the introduction about succession. The succession plan? Why would it be plural? Yoshua. No, it's part of the imagery and the illustration and the kind of the drama in a positive way of passing on the leadership, the title of leader to Yoshua, was not just the fact that Yoshua was a warrior and that he was a great soldier and he was the person who was going to bring them into Eretz Yisrael, as Moshe wrote in the beginning of the parsha. But Yoshua had the dual role of a scholar-warrior. He was Safra Vasaifa. He was very rare in the annals of Jewish history where you had somebody who was equally facile within the concept of Torah and study under the inspiration of Moshe as he was as a warrior, as a general. Which brings up a little bit of a hint to the fact, not for this parsha, why Moshe Rabbeinu himself was not elected or not selected to go and bring the Jewish people into Israel. I've always felt this based on the Netziv, that he not to say that I know the answer, that I wouldn't dare to create another reason why Moshe Rabbeinu, but calling from other commentary, Moshe Rabbeinu, his persona was a miracle persona of a teacher, instructor, inspirer, and the persona that was necessary for leadership to move into Eretz Yisrael was a general warrior who would be able to fight all the wars and then also divide up the land and keep the people together but at the same time separate. So it's almost as if saying that Yehoshua had characteristics that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't have in the next generation, which is also part of succession because institutions or times change and the leadership needs to adapt to the change, to the times that are changing at the same time, because a leader that can't adapt or that doesn't have the skill set to speak the new language, it won't be an effective leader to bring the people to the next level. We're going to come back to that point. So that's a little bit of another kind of an introduction. What? So why is it important? Because Moshe and Yehoshua wrote it. So, but Kitvu Lechem. Moshe and Yehoshua together should write it.
Who's talking?
Moshe Rabbeinu is recalling what God said to him. V'ata kitvu lechem at hashira hazot, as if to say, together you and Yehoshua are going to be writing this Sefer Torah to transmit it to all the Jewish people. He's saying God's words, right? V'ata kitvu lechem at hashira hazot, v'sima b'fiim.
It's also similar to why a king had a Sefer Torah, right?
Absolutely.
And it was for Yehoshua himself.
Oh, could be. And give it to Yehoshua because he became like the de facto king. Interesting. Very good point. Yeah. And maybe that was his. You ever see a little Rebbe Torah? Did anybody ever see those little Rebbe Torahs? They're Rebbe Torahs. You have to be a little Hasidus to see these little tiny Torahs.
I saw what they claim is the Baal Shem Tov's Torah.
Really?
The Munkashi Rebbe.
Wow.
I learn from it twice a year. On Yom Kippur and on Sukkot Torah at night. Right?
That's very impressive.
And it's the Torah for it. Silver arm does this big. This Torah is small. And I actually was able to read from it. It's so clear. Tiny ksav. Kind of like chill ksav.
Beautiful. Yeah. That's very, very nice compliment to that concept. So the Ramban says that this is about, doesn't say it really, I'm taking the liberty of editorializing a little. That's okay. I'll tell you if I make stuff up. I'm kind of making up this Ramban a little, but I gave you the text. So if you want to really see what the Ramban is saying in his actual words, I'm not completely misleading you, but I really believe that the Ramban was adding to this concept of transition. The Emek Davar, which was interesting, is in Bereshi. There's an introduction to Bereshi. Has an introduction. I'm sorry, it's going to be a little out of order as far as themes, and we'll try to pull it together at the end. He says something really interesting, is that he doesn't focus on the word shira, kitfu, like the Ramban, but he says that, look at the first, but in Darim daf lamed chet helu b'firish mikar kitfu lchem et shira shu kol haTorah, as I said earlier, but lo nechteva b'lashon shira ela korcha chesh b'teva v'skulat shira. But why is the Torah called a shir, a song, a poem? What would be the reason? In other words, we're just taking it for granted that it says Va'ata Kitvul Chema Tashirazot. CFM, that means the whole Torah. Why would the Torah describe itself in poetic language? So the Netziv asks an obvious question once it's asked, what poetry, what genre of poetry does the Torah reflect? Who writes a type of poem that looks like prose? It certainly doesn't look like poetry. So I think it's a very important question because we can gloss over it easily and just assume, oh, Kitfulchem Dashirazo, it must mean the Torah. So he's saying it very literally, and he has a very nice answer. prose. A poem is different than prose. It says that a poem is subject to interpretation. Whereas something which is more literal, you don't really have that much depth or lateral license to understand the text in different forms. It says it's not that the Torah was taking on the form, a genre of a poem, because it clearly isn't, but it's taking on the system of learning of a poem. That the Torah is not just a monolithic book that's open to just one aspect of interpretation. So much of the Torah, imbued in the Torah, is this type of kind of a built-in institutional ambiguity. And if you go through the entire Torah, you can find this ambiguity in so many different references from the first few words of Bereshit all the way till the end of the Torah. And that's what poetry is. So looking at the last page, I'm sorry that I told you, it's not really done in an order that I would have liked. But I have apologized before for my source sheets, and Dr. Friedman has invited me back despite the fact that they're not organized in the way that other people organize them. Or maybe I only get called in when there's no one else who can give the class, so as in last second, okay, that's good enough. If you look at the Aruch HaShulchan, also a little bit of an obscure Aruch HaShulchan. It's Aruch HaShulchan was... My father is a really very fine Talmud Chacham, and he still had the Mesorah of Europe. So the pearls, the little that I was able to gain from him, really did speak to the traditions of Europe that he brought with him. He came over as a little boy, but he was part of a legacy family of Hasidus, so he really knew a lot. And there were the types of commentary that he would add, you really can't find in really any books. Even till today, some of the insights he shared with me, I've never really seen anywhere. He said the Aruch HaShulchan was a magnificent tour de force of written halacha. It is one of the most magnificent halachic books in the Jewish library, period. He finished it, let's say, late 1800s, early 1900s. I know recorded someone who may be listening to this will know the exact date by Wikipedia, but it was finished pretty early in the 19th century. And he was the go-to halachic sefer for a long time. Along came the Mishnah Berurah, and the Mishnah Berurah knocked off the Aruch HaShulchan from the primary bookshelf and put him up on a higher shelf. My father explained why, which I want to get into, but it's really unfortunate the Aruch HaShulchan isn't the staple halachic foundation for all halachic learning. And Epstein wrote an introduction to each of the sections of the four Shulchan Aruch, and this introduction is in Choshen Mishpat, out of all places. See, he writes about the concept of Torah in the sense, if you take a look at it, Amnam ipni ribui hadeyot. I'm juxtaposing this to the Nitziv. Okay, Ham ipni ribui hadeyot amdu shnei gedolei ador besofa tzadik. I'm sorry, Yosef Atzadik Moshe chabru chiburim gedolim bekamut veichud al sifrei tor. Shem Moshe v'kol chi hadeyot. One second. Okay, it's the next paragraph, so I don't have it here. But I will, if somebody wants to open the Aruch HaShulchan, if you have it, the Aruch HaShulchan says that the
Over there.
Here it is,
Aruch HaShulchan, this side.
Over here.
Probably on top shelf.
Is it above the Mishnah Berurah?
Yes.
Yeah.
Very symbolic. Now, when you go to
buy liquor, you always want it on the top shelf. When you want to buy a sefer, not that I should use liquor as the reference. Okay, here it is. So it's in this introduction to Choshen Mishpat. I'll read it to you. I'm sorry you don't have it here, but I will give it to you as it's written. V'chol machloket ha-tanayim v'amorim v'agonim v'aposkim v'emet l'mevin davar l'oshro divrei Elokim chayim. To understand all of the different disputes with the Rishonim and the Achronim is all part of the great, magnificent, majestic word of God. U'l'kulam yesh panim b'halacha. And everyone has a place within the canon of Jewish law. V'adarabah. Zoti Tiferet Torateinu HaKdoshah V'Torah. That is the beauty and the majesty of our Torah. Kol HaTorah Kulo Nikrei Shira. The entire Torah is called a song, the Tiferet HaShir, and the beauty of song is Keshakolot Mishunim Zemize. When you have harmony and you have voices that are different and they're blended together, or there's or taking musicians that can play extemporaneously, like jazz music that are following the same theme and the same rhythm and the same beat, but have different interpretations of the same music, ze ikar hani'imut. That is the beauty and the sweetness of Torah, that the Yam of Torah has so many different voices that are different from one another but blend together to create harmony. That's by the way he wrote his sefer. He wrote a sefer where every part of halacha came together from the disparate sources that he brought, and then he came up with one halacha source similar to the Beit Yosef. But the idea being that the reason why the Torah calls it a shir is that it was never supposed to be just a narrow interpretive book of straight halacha, and you can prove this by looking at the first Rashi in Bereishit. The Torah says, why don't you start with HaChodesh Elohim, which is the first mitzvah. So Rashi gives an answer, Koch Masabi Gid Lamo, because the Torah really doesn't start from a sense that it is a book of halacha. Of course, it reaches that, but it's a book of ethical, moral, instructive of lessons that could be interpreted differently. We're going to get to that point, and that's what a shir is. So that's why the Nitziv asked this question. inadvertently or advertently or deliberately, the Aruch HaShulchan really comes to almost the same conclusion that the Netziv does, but uses a more poetic way of explaining the concept of Shir. We're going to come back to this also. The Ralbag, I think we'll skip him just because we'll make sure we have enough time. And I also want to make sure I can tell you, it's the safer, if you go back to the last page, second page.
Second to last?
Yeah, second to last. Yeah, the middle page, yeah. I think we actually have time for the Bag. 1 second. Let's go to the Bag on the bottom of the first page. Kvarnit Baruch Reze Asha Shira Hi Divrei Torah B'chlola Ad Tuma V'shenema V'yichtav Moshe Tashira Hazo V'yachar Kein. You can see in the Pasuk V'hi Kecholot Moshe L'chtov V'divrei Torah Hazot Al Sefer. As we follow Psukim, I mean, if you want to go and follow it afterwards, go look at Pasuk Kaf Bet, Pasuk Kaf Dalet, Pasuk Lamed, by Yedaber Moshe Baznei Kol Kal Yisrael Divrei Ashira Azot Ad Tuma Vizeh Kulo Mima Shiyore B'Lisafek, and all of this was to teach without a question of the doubt. Shekam Mashama Katuv Lachem Et Ashira Azot He Kolel Et Kol Divrei Torah B'Hashira Imayim. So the Ralbag takes a little bit less of a kind of a poetic approach, like the, let's say, the Netziv. By the way, you wouldn't expect the Netziv and the Aruch HaShulchan, two giant halachicists and some of the greatest minds of the 1800s, to end up writing in poetic language what the value of Torah is. It's really, you know, it shows the depth and the scope of both the Aruch HaShulchan and the Netziv. The Netziv doesn't really doesn't surprise you if you know the story of the Netziv's life. He was a very broad-minded person. In fact, one of the books my uncle in Netziv, if you ever read the original version, was pulled by Art Scroll or by Mesora after it was published. You know, did you see it? I have the book. What? Good. So, and it was put. Okay, the Mekov Aruch, right. So the book called My Uncle and Netziv was written. The first one wrote that on Shabbos, the Netziv would read newspapers. And then the community was so outraged that the book included this kind of demerit on the Netziv's persona that they literally pulled the book and reprinted the same book without that passage. There probably were a couple of other references in there that the editing police didn't really like too much. And I want to get back to that as well. So that, I'm really not just bringing that up as an interesting story, but it has reference to what we're saying. Here he says that the word Shira, according to the Ralbag, is Katov L'chem Et Hashira Hazot, he kolel et kol divrei HaTorah v'Hashira Imayim. No, it's not that the whole Torah is a shir, like the Netziv says and Baruch Epstein says. He says the entire Torah is the whole Torah and the shir. In other words, there are several times that there's poetry written, maybe as if to say, you would think that the Torah shouldn't include the shir, the poetry, let's say, in Hazinu, or the poetry that exists in Az Yashir, almost Kamash Malan, that comes to teach you, no. Therefore, you should know that you should also include the shir. And why would someone think they shouldn't include the shir? Right. What would be the, as we say in the world language, what would be the havmina, what would be the presupposition why someone should not include? You need the Torah to tell us the words Ketov L'chem Et Hashira Hazot, and you should write Divrei HaTorah Hazot Al Sefer Ad Tumam, including the Shir, because someone could come out and say, well, maybe the Torah has this basis in Halacha, and anything which is not in Halacha. What? The gods are right. The gods, you don't need to do it. Or it's like in some communities, it's Tanakh. You don't need to read that story. Actually, Tosfot says it in Kiddushin. It's not far-fetched to get there, but people don't really spend it. I'm sorry. People don't spend enough time recognizing that there's a great deal of value in the shear of Torah also. And that's something which I think the Rabbag may have been saying when he got there. By the way, if you look at Parsha books in Jewish bookstores, you'll notice that many of them are Parsha books with halachic interpretations of every Parsha. It's a genre of the last 15, 20 years, maybe a little bit longer, that took biblical exegesis out of the library of Jewish bookstores and replaced it with a study of Torah through the lens of halacha. So even if there's no, let's say, mitzvah tasei, mitzvah lo tasei, in that any particular parsha, the authors will lean towards understanding the halachic of lessons that could be learned from every parsha in the Torah. So the next time in Jewish books, they'll look around and you'll see that this is validated. And there's a reason for it, but I'm not going to say it here. because it's not... I would not say it. It's just my thinking. It's not good or bad. It depends what you think about it. But it's just conjecture. So I'm sharing an observation. Anything beyond that would be editorializing. Try not to do that. If you take a look now at the Sefer HaChinuch, by the way, if you inherit the Sefer Torah from your family as an estate, did you mekayim the mitzvah? It goes back to that same halacha, right? But if you go back to saying v'atah kitvu lechem atashira hazot, which will be the third way of looking at it, that it's not about really learning, and it's about getting back to what Dr. Friedman said in the beginning, that it's understanding the different variations of understanding Torah. It really doesn't matter how it's brought to you. It matters that you understand what the depths of Torah is trying to present and promote. If you take a look at the Sefer HaChinuch, lichtov kol achad Sefer Torah la'atzmo, shenitztaveinu liyot l'kol ish yisrael Sefer Torah, katvu klomar biyado. So here the Sefer HaChinuch is saying that you really have to use your hand. Ma'aleh katuv, as the Gemara Menachot, im katvu biyado, harezeh mishubach v'nev amod. So what has it if someone can't write a Torah? So it's similar to the Rabag that you have to write the whole Torah, a Torah that has the Shira, but it's getting back to our original conversation. The Rambam in the bottom of the page is the same. Doesn't really add much to the exegesis aspect of it, more of the halachic side. I want to get to two more interpretations, I think, with plenty of time before Ma'ariv. This is, first of all, the Maharal. Yeah.
What about the Pash? Just looking at the Pasuk. Write the Torah, Shira. The Lambda is from the all of this is lama'an, l'aid. I mean, it seems pretty clear that there are many reasons. That's the ultimate reason. It's l'aid b'nei Yisrael.
I think you're right. So that would go into the different buckets, what the purpose of this mitzvah is for. Right. It's not. And by the way, you should just know before you get the Taz in the Shulchan Aruch says that they're all the reasons are right. It's for a safe turn. It's a great explanation after hundreds of years of dispute what the reason is. He took the easy way out. He just says you have to learn from it, you have to have them in shul, it has to be an aid. He doesn't say the poetry one, that's really reserved for the later commentaries, but I would throw that in also. Yeah.
But the fact that it's an aid, how's he there from Shemayim and Pharaoh?
Right.
To aid them.
That would make sense that it's only Hazinu. Right. So it's Rashi. We're talking about a whole school of thought that said this has nothing to do with Sefer Torah. This has only to do with Hazinu. So you can really, it's fair to look at it either way. I'm not really, of course, question is, right, so what would be the purpose of writing only Hazinu down? Because that's it's the witness to the covenant and to the Brit. So one way or the other, we're still getting to the end point. I want to show you the people are not really familiar, too familiar with him. His name is Rav Shaul Yisraeli. You have to kind of be on the Israel side of Torah learning in order to get to him. He was a disciple of Rav Kook, Rabbi Yitzhak Cohen Kook, and Rav Kook was very instrumental in bringing Rabbi Yisraeli back to the land of Palestine in those days. And he became a. He became a very strong proponent of the words of Rav Kook, but and of course in the generation in which he lived, he died in the mid 1900s, 1980s maybe in that time. So he must have been right because Rav Kook died in 1935, and if he was a young man during the 1930s, then he had the opportunity to live long enough for him to see the new world of Torah. It's going to be a little harsh. I'm telling you now, I don't know where you stand in this spectrum, but like so many commentators, they write based on the world in which they live, which is such a remarkable way of studying Jewish history, is by trying to infer from people's writings what they were seeing and what they were commenting on. So Rav Yisraeli writes in the Davar Zeh Mushag Rak Aydei Kitvu Lechem Et Hashira. It's really, if you're not comfortable with Hebrew, I'll translate this. You may ask me, why am I even bothering? Because if you are comfortable with Hebrew, it really has his own cadence that's worth reading. Kol HaKarei B'lo Nima V'Shoneh Lo Zimra Alava Katuv Gam Ani Netati Lem Chukim Lo Tovim U'Mishpatim Lo Yichyu Behem. Whoever reads without any intonation, without any any rhythm, is as if that you gave chukim and tovim mishpatim lo yichyu behem. They're not going to last. They won't endure. Hatorah tzricha liyot nikrat b'ni'ima b'nigun b'shira. Torah needs to be read with a certain degree of rhythm and a beat and a tone and a tune. Vashira vashir hu Hashem isagel t'Torah l'chol tkuva, and the song aspect is what adapts Torah to every period of time. I'll explain in a minute. Ki kol tkuva vashir shela. Every period of Jewish history needs its own song. Hanigun shela viata. What Lord he picks up on? One that probably would have passed everyone's mind. What is the word he picks up on? Viata now. In other words, we need to interpret the cadence and the tune and the tone of Torah based on the events that are unfolding in our period of time. Of course, one can look at this and say this could be bordering on what could lead to heresy, because how far do you go to interpreting the Torah based on the period of time that we're living in? Those who felt that it was okay to permit driving on Shabbos in the 1950s to come to shul ended up seeing 70 years later there was no Jewish community left, because people can drive wherever they want. They can drive from Caldwell to Short Hills because they can go to their synagogue. So obviously it has to be done with a very strict adherence to Mesorah. But what Rabbi Yisraeli writes is Shaloha bitui miuchad shel argatash l'neshama d'var Hashem. Without understanding the weave and the connection to the Shema of God, our Torah ain't a mishtana. The Torah never changes. It stays permanent. It's immutable. The Torah ketav as it is. Ulam hanigun mishtana l'fi ha'ozen l'fi ha'sviva. The song of Torah changes, but not the text of the Torah. Mizimrat ha'aretz nigun eretz Yisraeli. Nigun zeh dayan kasheh lehen lishivot l'saglo. By the way, this he picks up, Rav Kook, Rav Avinzer writes about this many times. He says that the yeshivot today are having a hard time adapting to a song to the new period of time in which we live. Adayin yesh v'nigun ha'gola olam mibein ha'ktalim. In Eretz Yisrael, we're hearing the song of the diaspora, of the exile, in the walls of the yeshivot in Israel. V'nigun zeh kol kach lo matim l'sviva. It's not at all appropriate for the period of time in which we live. Zarla. He said that, and he goes on, so you can read it if you're comfortable with Hebrew, that his criticism of yeshivot that are not seeing a Torah that's more organic to the land and to the culture of Eretz Israel, and of course the rebirth of the Jewish people that are left the exile and now are finding its sovereignty in the land of Israel that we're only pining for and yearning for thousands of years, and yet the Torah is still the same Torah that emanated from the walls of yeshivot that were living outside of Israel without sovereignty and without the culture in the land of Israel. Said it'll never really connect to the land of Israel and it'll get weaker.
Do you think he's saying that the standard European yeshivas are having a hard time fitting to the culture of this, whatever?
Right, so Rav Kook, and I without getting too much into what I think he was saying, you know, try to comment on it too much, but Rav Kook felt very much that the world of Torah has to renew itself based on the needs of the generation. So Rav Kook wrote an article of Mamar Hador, which is a very well-known article in the Kookonian circles, that went to instruct that this generation needs something different, because they're yearning and pining for a deeper understanding of Jewish life more than European Jewry can give, and that's why they threw off Torah, because they said the secular Zionists couldn't relate to Torah as it was. So Torah has to now understand what the secular world needs within the Zionist community and then adapt to it, not to change the Torah, but to have a better understanding of the philosophy of Torah, of the connection of Torah to Israel. And that was really, I think, what Rabbi Israel is saying. As far as the yeshivot themselves, I mean, you can read into it, but for a long time, there was a lot of tension between the Zionist, religious Zionist yeshivot and the non-Zionist religious yeshivot, and to some degree, that tension exists today. It's much more muted than it was in the past, but Rav Kook himself lived a life of of a great deal of struggle and suffering. He was an outcast, and he was marginalized, and he was repudiated, and he was rejected, and he was also maligned. His whole life was one great struggle, not just with the secular Jews, but he's also struggled with the yeshivish classic community. Rav Yisraeli picks that up on. I'd like to end, if I can, because I want to make sure I'm not late for Meir, what my father, Zechon Lebracha, said about this pasuk, and that always stayed with me. And it gets back a little bit to Rabbi Yisraeli. Of course, there was no way that he could have ever seen it. He said, the reason why Torah is compared to a shir, and is, although the words are not really perfectly translatable into what his interpretation was, he said that Torah is cognitive, and it is a pursuit of kind of mental engagement. So the shir is much more emotive, and that when a person sings, a person has if you hear music that you like, different parts of your body instinctively will move to the rhythm and to the beat. He said the full aspect of absorbing and committing and engaging in Torah is not just the cognitive aspect, but understanding that there is a certain beat to Torah that is not only affecting and it's speaking to the mind of a person, but it's also speaking to the soul and to the life of a person. And that's why it says Va'ata kitvu lechem at hashira hazot, not to say like Aruch HaShulchan that there are many ways of interpreting it, and not similar to Rabbi Yisraeli that there is a particular nigun for each generation, which is more of a generalization of an organic way of understanding Torah for an entire community. My father's looking at more as a personal approach that how does Torah affect the person. I wish everybody Gmar Chatima Tovah.